Boca Club, and welcome back to another in our ongoing series of Shirim Daf Yomi. We are now in our third Shir, Masechet Ketubot, Daf Dalet Amud Aleph, right near the bottom of the Amud. Still examining the Braitot that we've used to expand on our understanding of the Mishnah and the Takanat, we begin as follows. Amar Mar. Hu Yashen Ben Hanashim Vehi Yashena Ben Hanashim. Let's just to review. This is talking about a circumstance where the father of the groom, or the mother of the bride dies just before the wedding. It's impossible to sell the food. It's going to be a tremendous financial loss. And so we put the mate away, have the couple marry, they have their first bia, and then the burial takes place, and then they have 7 days of mishteh, followed by 7 days of avilut, but during all 14 days, they sleep separately. Now, this supports Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan, after remember that a chatan and kala during their 7 days of celebration are considered, from a certain perspective, to be in a moed, in a time of like chol hamoed, of simcha. And what's the halacha if somebody is lo aleinu mourning during a moed, even though there's no public mourning? Rabbi Yochanan says, nonetheless, Dvarim Shaltsina, things which are private and intimate, and the most obvious one is relations, which is also during Avilut, they still apply. So in the same way, even though this Chatan and Kala are in a Yom Tov, as it were, still they're prohibited from having relations because one of them is mourning. Now, Darsh of Yosef read Rava Mishpein de Rava. So he quoted Rava and saying, Lo Shanu Ela Shalobal. He quoted Rava saying, this only applies that a couple has to stay separated if they haven't yet consummated their marriage. Meaning, if they haven't yet consummated the marriage, the assumption is that they're so filled with anticipation and excitement, they won't be able to restrain themselves. But once they've already had bia, then they can stay together, just as clearly all couples who are married, and then for a particular time, either a particular time of the month, or a particular days, like Tisha B'Av, etc., or later on in life, and all later they're availing, they still remain in seclusion together, because the assumption is they're able to restrain themselves, because they already have been intimate. Aval, ba'al, ishto yishena imo. So, but if he's already had bia, then they can be sleeping in the same room. How can Rava say that? After all, our Braita is talking about a case where, as we said, they had the first bia, and then were separated. So you have to remember that the rest of the Braita said that the same rule applies if just before the chuppah she became a nida. And so we're saying that Rava's comment that they have to sleep separately is only if they didn't consummate, meaning if they consummated beforehand and then she became a nida, they can still stay together. But you can't say that because ha v'chein tani. The Braita says the chen misha pirsa ishto nida, meaning similarly, which means whatever we're going to say about pirsa ishto nida, we are also saying about the earlier case of avilut. And now Rava is saying that they only have to sleep separately if they didn't consummate, and in the case of the avilut, they did consummate. So it's a little bit of a conundrum. We answer, Hachi Kiamar, this is what Rav meant. This is how Rav would interpret the Braita. If somebody's wife became a Nida and he had not consummated beforehand, then they have to sleep separately. Meaning that in the case where one of them becomes a mourner, even though they already did consummate, they have to sleep separately. In other words, the notion is that people are not going to be as serious about mourning, and they're going to take it lightly, and they're going to violate it, and therefore we have to separate them, as opposed to Nida, which people will feel very serious about, and therefore, as long as they've had Bia once, they can be trusted to be together, and they can restrain themselves. Now, that works on an assumption. You're going to tell me that Avelut is considered lighter than Nida? Well, certainly it's lighter. Avelut, the issue of Tashmish, is relatively light law. The issue of Tashish of the Nidas and the Chiyuv Karet. But what the Gemara here means is, are we to say that Avelut is looked at as being lighter by people, and therefore they're more likely to violate it to be Nida, We have a ruling that seems to suggest the opposite. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Chanina, Amar Rav Huna, Kol Malachot Shisha Osah LaBa'alah. When we get to the fifth parak, we're going to see what are the regular services that a woman does, I don't know of any better way to say it, on behalf of her husband, making the bed, the things of that sort, right? All of those things, Nida Osah LaBa'alah, a woman does for her husband when she's a Nida. Chutz, there's three things that she doesn't do. Meziga Takos, pouring a cup of wine, Hatzaat Hamita, and that may be only Bafanav, but making the bed, Barchatzah Panav Yadav Raglav, and washing his face and hands. These are all things that Gemara later on in the fifth parak says are things of chiba, these are things of intimacy and closeness, and of course it's a bad idea to do that during Nidah, but all the other things about the housework, the cooking, everything else, she can continue to do. So in other words, we are concerned that if she does these things that inspire intimacy, they may violate the restrictions of Nidah. But in the context of Avilut, we see the opposite, or we see less stringent. Tanya, even though a man cannot force his wife when she's mourning to put on makeup and lipstick and to make her hair nice, nonetheless, she can still do all of those things of intimacy. So in other words, we're assuming here that because she's an Avelut, she can even do these things of intimacy because there's no way she's going to violate the restriction of having Bia, as opposed to Nido, where she's more likely to violate it. So that seems to suggest that people take Avelut more seriously and are less likely to violate the Isser of Tashmish during Avelut. So, the first answer we give is that we're going to distinguish between he being in mourning and she being in mourning. The case that we just talked about a second ago is talking about where she's in mourning. When she's in mourning, she's not likely to, quote-unquote, cave in and have beer with her husband. She's too taken up by her own emotions. Whereas if the husband's mourning, it may be very easy for him to be, seduced, not exactly the word we want to use, but for him to violate that law. Ah, but how can you say that our Braita, which according to you now was talking about when he is a mourner, and when he's a mourner, we're concerned that he's really going to not treat mourning very seriously. Remember, the whole premise of the Braita starts out with either the father of the groom or the mother of the bride dying, which means it has to apply to both. So, Ketani Ashara, you're right, that Aviv Shachatani Masha Kala is true about all of the other things, meaning that if either one of them dies, they put the mate away, if the food is really unsalvageable, and they have the wedding, and then they have Shiva Yimei Mishta, and everything else. But the last particular comment, which is that even if they already have Bia, they have to sleep separately, that's only if it's his father, not her mother. So his father, he's the mourner, and then the concern is that he's not going to treat mourning very lightly with his new wife. Now, Umishani ben Aveluti de la Aveluti da, but since when do we distinguish between his Avelut and hers? Vatanya Mishamet Chamim O Chamoto, if a man's father in law or mother in law dies, in other words, his wife is now an Avelah. Just what we saw. He can't force his wife, for she's mourning, to dress up nicely. Rather, what happens? He has to turn his bed over, which is the custom of Avilut at the time of the Gemara, and to practice Avilut with her. And also, if her father or mother, in other words, her husband's parents die, she's not allowed to dress up nicely and do her rouge and part her hair. She also turned over her bed and practiced Avilut with him, which sounds like whether she's in mourning or he's in mourning, it's all both of them in mourning. So the answer is talking about Avilut today. So we're going to say yes, but it's specifically in the context of when he's in Avilut, they have to sleep separately. Havachain Tani. Ah, you just said Vachain, in other words, she practices just like he practices. No, Kiktani Akicholufirchus. That's just, the Vechain is just saying that just like he can't force her to put on makeup when she's mourning, she's not allowed to put on makeup when he's mourning. Ah, Vahimoktani. But it says she practices with him, sounding as if they stay together. So my love, Imoba Mita. So lo, Imoba Bayit, meaning that when she's in the house with him, she practices Avelut. It has nothing to do with intimacy. Rav told his son, when his son's wife died, be'apa nahoga veduta, when you're in the presence of your wife, behave like an avel. So a man's wife is an avel. He also has to sit low and he has to not wear shoes, etc. But you can go out to the store and go to a movie. That'd be nice, but you can do those things. But in her presence, you have to honor that. Now that's one answer to the seeming contradiction between the Braita, which indicated that once they had Bia, they still have to sleep separately, and the other statement that said that we don't, that and that's not true about Mida, and the other statement that seemed to say that we treat Avelut more seriously, and then there's less of a reason to be concerned that they're going to violate it. So one answer was whoever the person says, and that ran into a problem, because our Braita equated his and hers Avelut. So we have another answer, which is Ravashi's answer. You can't compare this unique case where the father of the groom or the mother of the bride dies just before the wedding with the normal case of Avelut. Regular Avelut is very serious. People are not going to treat it lightly. People are not going to violate it and have relations. They're too taken up with their emotions and everything else. They're going to treat it seriously, which is why a woman in Avelut can make the bed of the husband, etc., because it's not going to lead to anything. But in our case, but since the rabbis were light and lenient about it, people are going to treat it lightly. So now, my kula, what's the leniency here that's going to cause people to treat it lightly? If it's because we say you can have bilat mitzvah before we bury the body, that's simply because the guy's not an avel yet. She's not an avel yet. Because when you become an avel, that's a machlokah of early Tanaim. You become an avel when you leave the doorway of your house, escorting the body to the cemetery. Either Rabbi Yeshua, she's the magorel. Or Rabbi Yeshua, as soon as the stone that covers the cave is rolled in, but the way plays out practically is the minute that the grave is covered over, then you become an avel. So in other words, there's really nothing very new or shocking about the fact that we allow them to have bilat mitzvah before we bury the body. Ella, what's the surprising thing? We have them do these 7 days of rejoicing first. That's the thing. They might say, you know what, this Avelut must not be so serious. They won't take it seriously. They'll have Bia, therefore we have to keep them sleeping separately. In other words, publicly it'll be celebration. Privately, they're still mourning. So this is the beginning of the discussion. It's going to take us through the next podcast at least, but the beginning of it we'll take a look at right now. The Braita also said at the very end of the Braita that in any case, you can't have the first Bia on Shabbat or Motzei Shabbat. The chuppah should not be on Friday, so you have to be on Shabbat or on Motzei Shabbat. Shabbat, I understand why you can't have it on Friday. Mishum chabura, because if she's a betula, the first bia may indeed cause a chabura, a wound, and that may be also a Shabbat, and that'll be the focus of the discussion in the next podcast. Motzei Shabbat, my lo, but how come you can't have a wedding on Saturday night? After all, there's nothing wrong with having a bia on Saturday night. First Bia, there's no issue of Chabura. Amar Rabbi Zeira. Rabbi Zeira gave the answer, which is Mishum Cheshbonot. He said, after all, if you're going to have a wedding on Saturday night, you're going to be sitting there on Shabbat thinking about how to get a couple more guests to work at the tables and all of that, and making all the financial calculations. So Amar Rabbi Cheshbonot Shom Mitzvah Miyasiri. Rabbi said, what's wrong with that? You're allowed to make calculations for the purpose of a mitzvah. You're allowed, for instance, on Shabbat to come up to somebody and say, listen, I want you to teach my kid Mishnayot, and I'll pay you X, Y, and Z, and you're allowed to make such a contract. Not a written contract, but you're allowed to discuss such things. Right? They both said, you're allowed to calculate Cheshbonot Shel Mitzvah. You're allowed to sit down and figure out on Shabbat, hey, you know what, we need 15 more sidurim here, they're going to cost this much, we have to raise this much money, and you're even allowed to get up and to make an appeal for that. You're allowed to get up and make an appeal for the anim. Rabbi Yaakov and Rabbi Yochanan holchin levatei knesiot levatei midrashot lefakeach hizkirab b'Shabbat. You're allowed to go to shuls and to batei medrash to see what the rabbim need, and to go around and say, oh, we need a better roof here, and it's leaking here, and we need other benches here. And take a look at that. You're allowed to go and make announcements or whatever is needed in order to save a life on Shabbat. In a sense, this is the most surprising one. These are like coliseums and stadiums. You have to go meet with the Roman governor on Saturday afternoon to talk to him about how to lighten things up for the Jews. That's okay too. You're allowed to negotiate, as it were, with the father of a young girl about having her marry your son or to marry you on Shabbat. You're allowed to go up to somebody, as I said, and contract with them to teach your son. Have him teach your son a trade. So with all of these different statements, it's quite clear that sitting down on Shabbat and saying, I'm having a wedding tonight and I'm concerned about how I'm going to arrange the band or whatever it may be, is not really asur. So that couldn't be a reason not to have a wedding then. The concern is that it's your wedding is tonight, a Saturday night, Shabbat afternoon. You may say, you know what, we need a few more chickens. Let's go shech some more chickens. And you'll be so tarud in the fact you got the wedding, lo aleinu, you'll forget Shabbat. So Abaye then turned to Abzer and said, El miata, Yom Kippur, Mishchal Yom Kippur, Shabbat. If Yom Kippur falls on a Monday, Yidacher, let's push it off to Tuesday. Obviously, reductio. He doesn't mean it seriously, but he's trying to make a point. Because you might say, oh, the concern is Yom Kippur's on a Monday, which means Sunday is the day you're supposed to eat a big meal. And if that's the case, you can't do it because you might shecht it on Shabbat. The answer is, now he says, look, when you're making a meal for yourself or your family, you're not going to forget that it's Shabbat. When you got a few hundred people coming and it's a big wedding, then you may forget. That's the concern. Inami, I have another answer. In the case of the Yom Kippur that falls on Monday, you have all of Sunday morning to shecht the menorah. Here with the wedding Saturday night, you don't have any time. So the real concern is, it's a real legitimate concern that you may end up doing that. So, now that you defend the Shema Yishchot Ben Off as such a valid reason, such a compelling reason for not having weddings on Saturday night, Erev Shabbat Nami, Zer Shema Yishchot Ben Off. We'll say the same thing about Friday. Because the reason you can't have a wedding on Friday night is because the meal may go into Shabbat, and then you're going to say, oh, we need some more chicken to go shech them, and therefore we avoid that. Interestingly enough, there were many times in the community that that weddings dafka were held on Friday. The minig in the yishuv in Yerushalayim was the dafka have the weddings on Friday afternoon, and that way the big suda would be the Shabbat suda. People were very poor and they couldn't really make a fancy wedding. The Shabbat suda, and that would be for family, and the same thing during the day. And sudash lishit, called Yerushalayim have told me this is the way it happened. Sudash lishit, the entire yishuv, which was not such a tremendously large community, but the whole yishuv would get together for festive Sudash Lishit, Sheva Brachot, and essentially they couldn't afford to take the whole week off. Sunday morning the Chatan would go back to work. In any case, Baruch Hashem, for the most part, we are in times when we can enjoy a little bit more and we can be Sameach a little bit more, and of course, Ein Simcha, Kisimchat Limud HaTorah, we rejoice in the best possible fashion in our study of Torah. So, Mi'etz Hashem, in the next podcast, we will continue on.